Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And this is going to be a fun one, right, Katie?
It definitely is. It's Monday morning. Super excited.
All right. So let's kick it off. We got Brian Peters with Citizens Bank. Welcome, Brian.
Good morning, Lee. Thank you for having me.
And we also have Dean Trevolino with Trevolino Keller. Welcome, Dean.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
All right. But first, we're going to start with Brian. Brian, can you tell us a little bit about Citizens Bank? How are you serving folks?
Sure. Thanks, Lee, for having us here. So Citizens Bank is one of the largest banks in the nation. And one of my elevator speeches I give to companies and people when I tell them about Citizens, I say, we're a 190-year-old bank that's 4 years old. And I get a strange look typically, but Citizens is a 190-year-old bank headquartered in Providence, Rhode Island. I think we're the 13th largest bank in the nation today by assets. We were part of RBS, Royal Bank of Scotland. We were acquired by them back in the 80s. And then 4 years ago, we were spun off in a public offering. And it was the largest public offering by a bank. It raised, I think, about $13 billion. It's increased in market cap. And over the last 4 years, we've invested heavily in people and technology and in products. And one of the ways that we've invested is that we're going nationwide with our expansion and our corporate banking efforts. And the first area that we've targeted to expand is here in the Southeast. And so I joined Citizens back in December of 2016. And if you remember, I was here about a year ago and mm-hmm. talked about the plans that we had to build and to serve our clients and our prospects. And we've got a lot to talk about as far as what we've been building.
Now, you're building out the Southeast region from here in Atlanta?
That's correct.
So why did you choose Atlanta as the hub of that initiative?
You can look right out your window and see all the construction going on here on Highway 400. You see Mercedes right across the street, building their headquarters. This is just a tremendous economy, a tremendous market. And you know, I've been here for around 30 years. And I was with a previous bank here in Atlanta. And it's just a great place to do business. So when we analyzed the opportunity that existed here in the Southeast, we looked at the top MSAs throughout all the Southeast. And it really came down to between Charlotte and Atlanta, where we wanted to set up our operations to be the headquarters for the mm-hmm. Southeast. Charlotte, we already have over 40 people. I think it's actually approaching 50 people in our office in Charlotte, mostly capital markets people. But we determined that Atlanta would be the best place to set up our operations here for growth from a corporate banking and commercial real estate standpoint.
And then, so now it's been a year later. How has the progress? What's progress?
The progress has been fantastic. I'm just thrilled with the progress we've been able to make. So to give you a sense, I actually went back and I listened to the podcast or the radio cast from last year. And one of the things I said on there that most important thing, at least getting us up and running, was finding good talent to join us. And I've been extremely pleased with the receptivity of the people that have been willing to come over and join us. My phone actually has been ringing off the hook, and I'll give Business Radio X part of the credit for that. That some people actually found out about what we were doing on the radio, and whether it was through LinkedIn or through emails. I've got a lot of contacts from people that are interested in joining us. So the progress we've made, we've hired. I was employee number 8 in the office. We are now up to 25.
Wow.
We've outgrown the space that we're in our office. We're actually, we just signed a lease to expand our office space. And fortunately, there was some office space on the same floor. So we'll be able to knock down the wall and almost double our space. I would expect that we will be over 40 employees within the next 12 to 18 months. And the employees would range from, we have an asset-based lending team here in Atlanta. Actually, the head of asset-based lending is located right here in Atlanta, head of all for Citizens. We have commercial real estate. We have treasury management. We have our credit risk manager. We have portfolio management. It's a growing market. And one of the things that I've sold some of our management on is this is such a great market for talent that Atlanta can be a center of excellence. And we're a very decentralized company. And obviously with technology, you don't have to be located in the headquarters right. to get some things done. And we are making this a center of excellence.
So now you're here in Atlanta as kind of the headquarters, but you're serving the Southeast.
How does
Citizens serve the outlying areas? Are you have boots on the ground there, or is this all kind of virtual?
Well, so we do have boots on the ground in certain places, and we are hiring more people, you know, throughout the Southeast. So we do not have any retail branch presence.
And right. That's a choice, strategic choice.
That is a strategic choice. I would not expect that we would have a retail branch presence down here. But the business that we're doing, we're typically calling on large corporations. I'd say, you know, typically the companies would be over $250 million in revenue. The sweet spot would probably be $500 million in revenue up to in excess of $5 billion in revenue. We actually have clients that are less than 250. We have a number of clients well over $10 billion in revenue. So, you know, we will do both ends of the spectrum. But the you know, the boots on the ground would be one of our first hires was in Miami. A gentleman that I used to work with at my old shop. And when he found out that I was coming over here, he said, I want to join you. And, you know, when I told him about what we were doing, he was thrilled. And he joined us in, I think it was March of last year, and is covering the southern part of Florida for us. And as of June 1st, we'll hire another person in Florida, in Orlando.
To cover Central.
To cover Central and probably up into Jacksonville and maybe in touch some in Tampa as well. I've got one banker right now in Dallas and soon to be two bankers in Dallas if I'm fortunate in being able to reel the next one in.
So now what's a day in the life for them?
It varies. So the number one thing is we've got to find ways to drive revenue. And to drive revenue, you have to bring the prospect or clients good ideas. You can't be selling the product of the day. It has to be, you know, what is your challenge? What's your, you know, what are you concerned about? You know, where are you looking to grow?
But they're actually going to their office and kind of doing some sort of discovery to understand what their needs are. So they,
that's right. It going to their office, they're doing it by email, by telephone, but there's no substitute for putting a, you know, face-to-face meeting and, you know, developing that personal relationship.
So that's their role, is just every day they better be meeting somebody.
Every day they better be meeting somebody.
Right.
That's correct.
And then they're getting to do that with the backing of Citizens and all the resources.
That's exactly right. So, you know, Citizens, just to give you a sense, we've the largest commitments that we've made over the last 18 months that I've been here, over $200 million with one company and $175 million with another. On the small end of the spectrum, we've done as small as a $10 million deal. Mm-hmm. So we've actually backed a management team that was a spin out of a company that one of my bankers had known for years at our previous shop. And so we, you know, started them out with an asset-based lending deal of a $10 million line of credit and, you know, with the full resources of Citizens to back that up and helping those companies grow.
Now, is that usually the point of entry, some sort of line of credit?
It usually is, but doesn't always have to be. Just give you another example. One of our longstanding relationships that I've had for over 20 years is a company here in town. And they have a lot of excess cash. And so they parked over $100 million in deposits with us. That's how we started the relationship. They don't have a credit need as of right now. I expect they will have a credit need pretty soon. So, you know, it's a little bit unusual to enter with deposits first and credit right. later. But we'll take it when we get it. We need the deposits.
That's a good story.
Yes.
And but when you're talking with somebody at this level, they already have a bank. Right. They have a relationship.
That's exactly right. They typically have more than one bank. Mm-hmm. With companies of this size, you know, they would have anywhere between, you know, a 3 to 4, you know, bank group, of which one bank is typically the lead bank, and the others are syndicated lenders within that credit facility. One of the, you know, the couple of the larger ones that I mentioned earlier, they would have excess of 10 banks, probably. I think one of them has more like 15 banks. So you think about the credit needs, and this the one I'm thinking of that we committed $175 million, they have over $3 billion in credit facilities by the banks. So
it's spread across
multiple banks. And so our challenge is we need to be relevant. We need to bring them ideas, and we need to get rewarded for the ideas and relevancy with our capital commitment. Mm-hmm. We do have the product suite to be able to do that, but you know, we're competing against some really tough competitors out there. I mean, you look at the, you know, the top 20 banks, that's our competition, and they have, you know, essentially the same products and services that we do. So we have to differentiate ourselves with our ideas and our people and our relationships.
And then the way that you differentiate yourself is you're hiring veteran people that have a lot of deep experience.
That's correct. The first hire that I made down Miami, he has probably 25 years of experience in the business, and I affectionately call him Mr. Miami. He's you know, he's of Cuban descent. He walks across the street, and people everybody knows him. So yeah, hiring very experienced people, it helps. But the gentleman that we're hiring in Orlando, He's probably the youngest banker that, well, actually, he is the youngest banker that I will have hired. And he's, you know, lots and lots of energy, probably more experience and more adept on the technology side. And he's going to bring something, you know, kind of new to the group. So looking forward to having his energy and his enthusiasm and his, you know, his skill set that he brings.
So they can be specialists. They don't have to be generals.
That's correct.
Do you prefer that?
It's really, what does the client prefer? Mm-hmm. So we actually have both. So we go to market on a generalist basis. We do have some industry verticals where we have specialties. But within our capital markets team, we have corporate finance experts that are dedicated to an industry. So if my banker here in Atlanta comes across an opportunity in the payments field, he can bring in a corporate finance expert that can help us get it across the line. And you know, there are, you know, two payments companies right across the sure. street here, and both of them are clients of ours, and both of them I've known for an extremely long time. And one of them has been a client for several years, and another one became a new client just several months ago.
And that's the benefit of Citizens. Those are the relationships and the skills are much deeper than a lot of other players in this.
Well, I'm not sure if I'd say it's much deeper than a lot of other players. It's the relationships are really why companies are willing to do business with us. So they will have companies will have very good relationships with a lot of other banks as well. And a lot, you know, bankers, we're very incestuous. We know each other. We were competitors. We're friends.
You might have been colleagues.
We're colleagues in many cases. Right. I was, you know, out yesterday and ran across one of my toughest competitors and, you know, we're friends. But we're also competitors, so you know we can't share too much.
Now, what's the feel for the economy here in Atlanta and the Southeast? Are people bullish? Are they bearish? Are they a little nervous? Don't think we're in a bubble.
Yeah, I don't think we're in a bubble. I think we're still pretty bullish. But as you can see by you know what the Fed's doing with the raising interest rates, and we're starting to see it with you know almost full employment, if not full employment. You know slightly increases in wages and. Real challenges in hiring all across the spectrum. You're starting to see some, you know, little stresses in the economy. But generally speaking, economy is, you know, and the people are bullish out there that, you know, profits are still really strong, you know, margins continue to increase. That where we're seeing some of the impact for us is loan demand is not as robust as we'd like to see it. And part of this is companies are cash flowing so well, they don't need to be borrowing as much. So
when that happens, how does the bank kind of insert themselves into the equation to be relevant for them?
Sure. There's a lot of disintermediation going on with banks being displaced by other financial providers, or in the case where we can actually make money is in the capital markets. So if a company has grown to the point where they can access the capital markets and they, you know, look at it and say, they'd like to have a longer term piece of debt out there financing their company. They can, you know, then access the capital markets and we can help arrange that financing.
And then are you helping them, like, what if they want to grow globally or have needs outside of the United States?
We're a little challenged internationally, so we have, you know, pockets that we can help, but realistically, we're a domestic bank.
And that's the lane you stay in?
That's the lane we stay in. Now, if a company does have needs, you know, from a foreign exchange standpoint, we can certainly execute in foreign exchange. We can hedge in foreign exchange. Just an example, one of our clients, actually two of our clients, are doing almost the same type of transaction, making acquisitions overseas, and they need to, in the other case, they already did it, where they said they wanted to lock in the the exchange rate so that they know what their cost is going to be, and so they did an interest rate hedge, and we're able to execute that hedge for them.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any advice for business owners that you can share?
Well, the advice that I would give them right now is really from a rate standpoint. You see what the Fed has already increased rates numerous times. They're expected to increase it again in June, probably increase it another couple of times this year with not a rapid rise after that, but still the consensus is continue to increase in rates. So If a company analyzes their financial statements and looks at their sensitivity to rising rates and how big of an impact that's going to have on their profits, they may want to consider hedging their rates right now. And you may not be hedging their entire debt, but taking a portion of it and locking in that rate so that if rates do rise, then they're hedged against that rise.
Now, you mentioned that you have a range of clients, some smaller, obviously, than others. But if you're one of these smaller sized companies and you are starting to cash flow positively, isn't it now a good time to kind of proactively kind of look for bankers?
It's always a good time to look for bankers.
Right. But isn't that strategically, like if I'm yes. growing, I want to have you, more and more resources at my...
That's correctly. I mean, if I'm the CEO or CFO of a company, I should always be willing to talk to bankers. Now, you may want to limit how many you talk to because you don't have, you know, all day to deal with bankers. But you don't want to wait until you need a banker before you talk to a banker.
Right.
So if you're operating well, if you're cash flowing well, if you see that you may have needs down the road, you know, go ahead and make sure you're developing those relationships with bankers and get their ideas on when is the right time to put a debt facility in place. You know, what should they be doing on extending their maturities? What should they be doing on hedging their rates? So, you don't wait until you need to see the banker to actually go see the banker.
And then what can you walk a person through? What's the questions they should ask a banker?
There are many of them. But I think the more than anything else, the questions that they ask should get them to the point where they trust the banker. You know, that the banker needs to be able to deliver the resources of that bank to that client. And I've seen instances where a bank or a banker would promise X and not be able to deliver. You'd much rather be able to tell a company, a client, a prospect to say, I can't do that. I'm not the right bank or the right person to deliver that. And be straight with them. You're going to earn so much more credibility with that company versus saying, I can deliver this for you and then not be able to do it. Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about, you mentioned you have deployed these seasoned veterans in a lot of places, and I'm getting to know this person, that's my guy, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's busy with other things, and then I have some junior person. How do you kind of manage that? Like, is my relationship with that person, or is it with Citizens in general?
Well, that's where it's important that the banker at Citizens or any other bank that's doing this has expanded the relationship to more than one person. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just as an example, if I have the relationship with a company and that's the only, you know, person that company has a relationship with, if something happened to me, if I were to get hit by a bus on the way out the door, then, you know, they no longer have a relationship with Citizens. So it's important for me to make sure that I've introduced my credit risk person, my portfolio management person, my, you know, other executive management that comes here into Atlanta. So that the company has a relationship with more than just me it's the team.
Yeah. And it's always the team.
That's exactly right.
But if something important comes up, I still have access to you if need be.
You should always have access to me so that the company that's, you know, nearby, who I'm very close with the CEO and I have been for years, if he needs something, he calls me. But if I'm not there, he's met the banker who works for me, who runs Point. He's met my boss and my boss's boss who've been down here. He's met our capital markets team. There are a lot of people that he could call if he can't reach me.
Now, what do you need more of right now?
Need more clients.
More clients.
Yeah. And so, you know, we've actually been very successful in the 18 months that I've been here. And I'd say most of it's because we've hired really good people who've been able to leverage their historical relationships and leverage the capabilities that Citizens has to offer. But at the end of the day, you know, we only make revenue when we convert a prospect to a client. And so if, you know, just to give you a sense for the success we've had, we brought on 33 new clients in the last 18 months. And those are, you know, from large corporations that, you know, typically need an event to happen in order for us to enter the relationship. You know,
so some change has to occur.
Some change has to occur.
Whether it's a person leaving or coming.
It's usually either they're making an acquisition, they're refinancing their credit facility, either proactively, because right now the terms and conditions are really good and the rate's really low. Or they're financing some, you know, big capital expenditure. There has to be some event for us to be able to enter that relationship.
Now, what happens when your person that's in the market kind of runs out of friends? Like, how are they meeting new people?
great question. So we call it the Rolodex. They need to have a big Rolodex so that they can leverage that and continue to have all as many of those clients and prospects that they dealt with in their previous institution to bring those over at some point when there's an event to become a client with us. But, you know, they should always be prospecting in other ways. There's, you know, whether it's the FinTech conference that we were talking about before we went on the air, you know, there's, you know, lots and lots of companies there. You just, you know, go and you start meeting people. You, uh,
You leverage, so they have to be immersed in their community.
They totally have to be immersed in their community and get involved with the Chamber of Commerce or the Rotary Club or their, you know, whatever, you know, events and organizations that make sense where they can expand their network. And yeah, and I've told all my guys and particularly the junior folks who are coming up, there's no substitute for building a network and always maintaining and develop that network. You know, you may not get reward from that network, you know, immediately or even in, you know, next 3 to 5 years. Somewhere along the road, that will come back to benefit you. And sometimes you don't even know that it's coming back directly. It comes back indirectly.
Right. Now, so when you're training a person to do that, how do you suggest, other than just joining different organizations where executives are, like how do you kind of have them serve the community, like especially a younger person?
Sure. Tell them to just get involved.
Volunteer
work.
Take leadership roles in these kind of business associations.
Yes, just be active. Don't get settled into your own little, you know, four-person golf game or your, you know, just your family, you know, get involved.
Because you know the one guy and that's a great client, but you have to expand.
Right. You have to always expand. So get involved with nonprofits, get involved with your church, get involved with, you know, business communities, you know, get the, you know, just, you know, be out there. It's, you know, the more that you're, you know, social and developing your network, people will start coming to you with, hey, you know, would you be interested in talking to this person, this company about this opportunity?
Now, when you're out there serving the community, it's not just by doing the work for the community. Like, do you recommend that the people become specialists in niches or certain verticals, or is it better to be kind of a generalist in this day and age?
Well, it's there's both. So, you know, we cover the market from a generalist standpoint, but the more expertise you have in any industry, the more you're going to be able to leverage that into building your reputation, having that company have confidence in you. So whether it's you individually developing a area of expertise in any certain industry, or leverage our corporate finance folks who do have that expertise in the industry, the more that you can show that you're credible, the more likely that company is going to choose you. So when you think about industry, becoming an expert in an industry, for example, here in town, there are lots of companies in the fintech space. So you can become a fintech specialist just in the Atlanta market and probably have enough opportunity here. But if you were to become a expert in, you know, retail, you know, you'd think that this might be a big market for it. There are very few retail companies that are headquartered here. A lot of retail that's being done here, but not the headquarters. So, you know, you would not want to be a retail expert in this space.
So now what kind of experts do you need here in Atlanta? Any verticals that are important to you here?
Well, we don't really need the retail vertical or any specific verticals. We do need bankers to develop expertise in areas where they can leverage that with enough companies here in this market. So,
That's what the beauty of Atlanta is. It has such a diversified economy. There's a lot. There's not like in some cities, you know, there's one industry, and if that goes bust, then
that's exactly
game over.
Right. That's
but here,
exactly
there's
right.
a lot.
You know, the two areas here in this market that I would say have probably the most
maybe potential
for verticals would be the fintech space and the healthcare space.
Healthcare,
right?
What about? Are you involved at all in the entertainment industry?
We're really not. I mean, we've got a, you know, a little bit of exposure, but I wouldn't say that we're, you know.
And that's become, you know,
it is.
$1 billion
and that's, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because one of the bankers that we've hired, she does have some experience in the entertainment space. And so we're trying to determine whether or not it makes sense to leverage that. Mm-hmm. We haven't found the, you know, the real opportunity there yet. But as you said, this is a big growing area.
Right. More motion pictures were filmed in, I think, Georgia last year than anywhere in the world.
That's right.
Now, what about supply chain? Are you involved in supply chain?
Very, very much so. So we have supply chain experts. They're from a product standpoint. Mm-hmm. They are involved with, and we call it supply chain finance or vendor finance. And we leverage that with some treasury management technologies that we have to help companies improve their working capital, improve their supply chain financing. And it's great business for us as well. So it's really a win-win, you know, for our clients and for us. It's a good business for us.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. If somebody went to learn more, what's the best way to get a hold of you or your team?
You can go online. So there, you can look at citizensbank.com, or you can email me directly at brian.peters@citizensbank.com.
Well, thank you again.
Lee, great to see you again.
All right. Great seeing you. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, Mr. Dean Trevelino with Trevelino Keller, our good friend. How are you doing, Dean?
I'm great.
Did you learn anything there? You got
to. I did. I need to
talk to your banker.
Talk to my banker.
So, what's new at Trevelino Keller?
Well, you know, we just came off of the FinTech conference, which I think collectively everyone would agree was
a home run, right?
It was a home run. The venue was fantastic.
Right. Had you ever done an event there before?
We have not. And I think we're going to see a lot more events taking place there. It was just a great setting.
I've thought it felt intimate, even though it was so huge.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was an optical illusion or with the roof closed and then those giant halo boards and the way they had the seats, kind of the way they had it there. You can have access to all the kind of luxury box at the bottom.
Yeah.
And the field was all in use, but it felt kind of intimate.
Yeah, no, I think they did a wonderful job of creating, you know, a setting that, you know, was fun. Certainly, you know, a different backdrop,
right.
But also I think relevant to, you know, to a more innovative group of
right.
companies and folks. So we enjoyed it. We're now getting ready for the Ag Tech Conference of the South.
Mm-hmm.
That one's going to be up in Alpharetta. It's highly connected to the Tech Alpharetta movement and activity, but
Alpharetta is a crazy booming area too. I mean, that if there was no Atlanta, there could still be an Alpharetta, and they'd still be a thriving city in most states.
The concentration of technology companies there is more significant anywhere in Atlanta, and we're just starting to learn that.
Right.
And so we've invested some time in you know, aligning with Tech Alpharetta, and you know, we're having fun. We're excited about the Ag Tech.
That's a big healthcare IT there. A lot of that.
Yeah.
So now, for you, why don't you tell us a little bit about PR in general? How's the public relations industry doing, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think it's doing very well. I mean, you know, we just came out with the rankings for the entire industry just over the last couple of weeks, and you know, I think for the most part, everyone is up. And, you know, public relations and agencies are somewhat, you know, defined differently these days, right? There's fewer and fewer traditional public relations firms. All they're doing is public relations. And there are still some out there, but, you know, there's just so much more that we can be doing and need to be doing beyond you know, just PR and media relations. So, you know, our focus is public relations, digital marketing, demand generation, and creative services. And we think we need all of those assets to be able to do what ultimately companies want us to do, which is move the needle.
So that's kind of a mental shift for some companies, right? Where it seems like there's a blurring of the lines for, there used to be ad agencies or marketing firms, and there were PR firms. These were all different things doing different things.
Right.
And now it seems like they're mashed up together.
There's a little bit of a mashing that's gone on. I think, again, you still have some traditional agencies, whether it's ad agencies, but even the traditional ad agency is certainly doing digital marketing, certainly doing web development. I think you have fewer and fewer pure web development firms out there, fewer and fewer pure branding agencies. You know, there's economies of scale in having, you know, fewer agencies. And, you know, as much as agencies want to come to the table for a client and collaborate, they don't do it as well as one agency that has all of those resources under one roof.
Mm-hmm. So, from a brand standpoint, what are your recommendations? What should a brand be doing kind of to get the word out about them, to get inbound in, you know, to kind of be ubiquitous when it's necessary?
Yeah. Certainly, you know, you got to have the public relations strategy. I mean, I think that brands today are increasingly more vulnerable. And so the public relations piece is designed to kind of build the reputation, protect the reputation. So that should be a, you know, starting point.
So is reputation and brand different?
That's a good question. I mean, it depends on who you're asking. You know, when we think about brand, we start out by thinking just about the name, right? And, you know, we work with a lot of startups. So they come to us with, sometimes they have a name, they want us to weigh in on that name, or they don't. And we need to, you know, start from scratch, build, create that name, give it some meaning. And then, you know, from there, it's what's the logo? It's, you know, something that simple. And the logo,
so logo colors, like just, this is kind of the basic foundational building blocks.
Yeah. So name, logo, brand identity, that's your colors, your simple things like business cards and how the materials that you're using to communicate externally, your trade show booth, all those things. And then the messaging. And we look at messaging as there's brand messaging and there's corporate messaging. The corporate messaging tends to be a little more, focused around the public relations effort. The brand messaging focused a little bit more around, you know, creative execution. So that's kind of how we look at the brand. And then the reputation piece is, you know, what people's perceptions or businesses' perceptions are of that brand.
Now, the thing about branding, I don't know if everybody realizes this, whether you think you're branding or not, you're branding because people are having an opinion about you, whether you're trying to help that opinion along or not.
Yeah. And, people are, I think, a little more savvy today about brand opinion. So, you know, sometimes they'll look at a brand just by its name or its logo and either gravitate towards it or not. And right. So we try to make sure that we don't have those barriers for, you know, the clients that we represent. We don't believe that we should always be changing a name because it's maybe not perfect, because that takes, you know, money, and we'd rather be using that to build a reputation or market the brand. But if we think it's an obstacle, then we'll make that recommendation that we need to go through that process of changing it.
So now, what is the work involved in, like, kind of an initial, when they're working with you for the first time, like what, and you go, okay, I'm going to help you get the word out. Like, what are some of the activities you're doing to help a brand get the word out?
Yeah. And, you know, part of that has to do with whether we're launching them, and we do launch a lot of companies, or whether they're an established brand and, maybe they're just trying to increase awareness, or maybe they lost their way and they,
maybe they got complacent, or the market moved and they didn't.
Yeah, they didn't shift with it. We've had, you know, a number of brands over the years, big brands that needed to become relevant again, right? So, you know, the starting point is what's the objective? What are we trying to accomplish? Is it a launch? Is it a refresh? Or is it just greater awareness, greater reputation? Once we know that, then, you know, we'll look at a media relations strategy, and that strategy has to take into consideration their local market. Most of the time, the local market is important, right? Their headquartered market. What are the kinds of things we can do to build that reputation locally? And then we're going to, you know, look at the industry, right? A horizontal focus. And then if they, you know, call out verticals, then we'll look specifically at some of the key verticals, right? Because each one of those horizontal vertical has media outlets, right, that we want to be paying attention to. So that's, you know, the starting point, the media relations strategy.
Is that a must-have for every client, or most of your clients? Do you have that built in?
Yeah, most of the time, media relations is kind of a core program. But we do have some where we may evolve into more of a digital strategy. Some of that depends on, again, what's the business objective. If, you know, their priority is, hey, we need leads more than we need our reputation, we may debate that a bit. The reality is, you know, you can spend, you know, 1/5 of what you would spend from a media relations side to a digital marketing side to a
lead gen. So digital marketing is some sort of a lead gen where there's, somebody's entering a funnel.
That's like one strategy, right? A demand gen sales funnel approach, which works very well if you've got a good database that you've, you know, built and nurtured over time. if you know your audience.
But a media relations strategy is one that you're pushing out content through other channels.
Right.
In the hopes that somebody reads it, resonates, and then reaches back out. And that's a less direct, it's more circuitous path, isn't it?
It is. Our approach is a little bit different. I've not seen an agency talk to it quite this way. A lot of agencies will talk about reputation management, and a lot of firms will talk about integrated marketing. We like to talk about reputation marketing, which is we're doing both. We're trying to build the reputation and then market that reputation, because mm-hmm. we still think that businesses and consumers are making buying decisions based on reputation. Mm-hmm. So for example, a few years ago, we launched a brand called Carvana, doing very well today.
Sure.
Public now.
Saw him at FinTech.
At FinTech, spoke at FinTech. Right. Around year three into that launch, we were fortunate enough to secure a Forbes fifth most promising company in the country.
Right. So take a Carvana for those who aren't familiar. That's a strictly online used car buying experience.
Right.
They don't have dealerships. You're buying the car based on what you see on the website or an online version of the car.
100% online car dealership.
Then they drive it to you and drop it off at your house.
Or you can go to one of their vending machines.
Right, and then pick it up.
The vending machine, it was a very innovative idea. And they've been rolling out vending machines all across the country. And so you could just do your transaction online, show up at a vending machine, essentially swipe a card, car comes down, get in it, and you go. So pretty progressive approach. But when, Forbes ranked them as a fifth most promising company, we marketed that positioning. That was taking a reputation asset and putting it into our marketing efforts.
So then that statement comes along for the ride whenever you're mentioning Carvana then.
Yeah, as often as we can. If we're doing, any kind of organic social, certainly we were doing a lot of organic social around that ranking when it came out. But if we're doing, non-funnel strategies like native advertising or public display advertising, LinkedIn efforts, we may have it somewhere referenced in there. And then we're leveraging other assets, like if, the CEO appears on CNBC or, Fox Business or ABC World News, all of which were things that weighed heavy on their servers when they appeared on those kinds of shows.
Now, when you're working in today's world, as opposed to, even a decade or two ago, there were much fewer media outlets. Now, everybody can make an argument that everybody's a media outlet. So how do you kind of balance between the traditional, maybe the old school, with the newer, with the, down to the individual blogger? How do you kind of put them all into play, or do you, or is that not a way to do it? Like now they have influencer marketing. Influencer marketing basically is one guy, one person, one woman is the influencer. That's a media one.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes life that much more interesting for us.
It's good job security, right? For PR firms.
It's good. And it's good for a couple of reasons. One, our universe is so much larger now that can carry our clients' message. That's a good thing. At the same time, the universe is so large that they can carry all kinds of messages. Right.
Lots.
Right?
And then they get lost. And now there are people saying fake news is a thing that, I can't discern what's real, what's fake, what's an infomercial, and what's the truth?
What's sponsored content?
Right. Right?
Fake news is a real issue these days. I think, for traditional mainstream media, a few years ago, I think there was less attention to traditional media because we had bloggers that were surfacing. And sometimes we can't distinguish between a blogger who's really tied to a traditional media outlet and a blogger who is just independent of one. But I think we're going to see or are seeing a greater respect for mainstream media because we know that, they've got a community they have to answer to. They have stakeholders. They have, they have a lot more at risk if they don't cover the news correctly. Although I think sometimes we get still confused, even with mainstream, between editorializing. It used to be that if you wanted a media outlet's opinion, you went to the editorial page.
Right.
Now, that's weaved
talk about
into,
a blurring of the lines that
weaved
those
into
distinctions
all media.
Are now out the window in most cases.
But I do think that we in particular rely more heavily on mainstream media, and then we're looking at bloggers to see what kind of followers they have. If they show up, if bloggers are showing up at conferences, then they're a viable outlet for us, right? Mm-hmm. So we have a few filters that we're, putting into play before we, feel comfortable about, a non-mainstream media outlet.
Now, are you seeing, is fake news as relevant to in a B2B world as opposed to like kind of just the consumer world? Like, because in politics, I can see where that's relevant, but, in the manufacturing world, is fake news even a thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it has, it can live anywhere, but I think that it tends to live more mainstream areas, right? Probably less in manufacturing, although...
Because I would think in a B2B world, that you're talking about pretty savvy people that can discern between what's make believe and what's more true.
Yeah, I just finished the book, Red Notice, written by a guy named Bill Browder, who appeared recently at the Carter Center. And his story is very relevant in real time. And he was a hedge fund manager, investment broker, who saw an opportunity to build a business in Russia. And at some point, they didn't like what he was doing. Ultimately, it led to the, brutal death of his lawyer in Russia. And so he used social media to get the word out. He created YouTube videos, and it led to the Magnitsky Act, which is live and relevant today. And now what you have is you have, the Russian side with a lot of fake news to convince people that action never have happened. So it's a fascinating and relevant real-time case that involves how social media can influence things like U.S. lawmakers, European lawmakers, but also how even governments can tap into fake news to try to, change public opinion.
So I would assume you don't have any answers to solving the fake news challenge right now.
I think one consideration, this is just, my opinion, but, if we did a better job of credentialing outlets, media outlets, to the point where that credential went mainstream, and if you didn't have it, then you were considered fake news, would be, one consideration. And we've seen that type of, model in other, we certify all kinds of things, these days. So that's just one thing that we haven't done a good enough job on.
So now for Trebolin and Keller, what are some of the things you got on the horizon? You mentioned this ag tech thing, but what are other activities you're getting involved in?
Yeah, the great thing about, business today and our business is, we have 7 practice areas. They have peaks and valleys, healthcare, lifestyle, financial services, environment. But the one thing that is consistent is this constant emergence of technology as a part of all of these other verticals, right? Mm-hmm. So fintech being, one. So clients like the fact that we have a financial services practice and a technology practice. We don't have an agriculture practice, but we've been, we've got an environment practice that gets into things like sustainability. And so that was also kind of a natural for us. We're seeing things around fashion tech, which we've been involved in on and off over the last 2 or 3 years. I think that's an interesting area. Ed tech is another one that we've been
education.
Fairly active in. Even food tech.
So if it's got tech in the name, Trevelina Keller is probably hanging around somewhere, right?
It's a good place for us to be. But there's, you know, the other nice thing that we see in business and in Atlanta today is, you know, just the greater availability of capital. Angel investors, you know, remain, you know, increasingly active. We're seeing, you know, our venture funds grow here. And so that's great for our startup community. And, you know, that's probably about 40% of our business.
Is a startup?
Startup. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're launching a number of brands, you know, this summer, which is exciting. Maybe I'll come back and talk about some of those. We've launched a couple in the first quarter that are doing pretty well. So, yeah, new, you know, roll out new companies.
Now, you're Atlanta-based, right?
We are Atlanta-based.
But you serve everywhere, right?
We do. And we, you know, purposely wanted to be an agency that focused on, you know, brands that had a regional, national, or in some cases, international focus. Mm-hmm. So,
but they're headquartered typically here in Atlanta?
Not necessarily. We've got a couple headquartered on the West Coast. We've got, you know, a few spread out all around the country. Mm-hmm. We don't do a whole lot of effort to market outside of the Southeast because there's, you know, there's just a lot of agencies that we would be competing with.
Sure.
But, you know, our network has grown over the years. And so, you know, we have, you know, boomerang clients that end up, you know, all over the country.
Right.
And so they, you know, they tend to call us. And so geography is, you know, has always been, somewhat irrelevant to us.
And, what do you need more of? How can we help?
Yeah, we would love, more clients, right? Who doesn't want more clients? You know, investors for those startups that we're trying to launch.
So that's part of your service is you help these startups not get it. You know, I'm sure you're not charged with, hey, get me more investors, but that you feel that's part of your role is to get the word out in a manner that helps them get investors.
We do. And we have purposely invested our resources to do that. So that's why we're involved in Tech Alpharetta. That's why we've been involved in Atlanta Tech Angels, Atlanta Tech Village, over at Emory, Keiretsu Forum, Raise Forum. So those are all groups that are, you know, here to help, you know, startups get capital. So
good stuff. So if somebody wants to learn more, what's the website?
TrevelinoKeller.com.
And that's TrevelinoKeller.com. Dean Trevelino, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Lee.
All right. Thank you to Brian Peters and thank you to Katie Galley. This is Lee Cantor. We'll see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.